Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. We had two storms since last we spoke, a big old soaker over the weekend, and then a big old debate last night. We're wondering what you're thinking about what you have seen and heard in both cases. We'll talk with Vivian Page and political analyst Bob Holsworth. They'll join us to talk about the potential commander-in-chief's latest meeting of the minds and where the election might be headed as a result. You can read Vivian's terrific columns at her website. We'll have all those details for you in a moment. And we'll check all that out right after this news from NPR. Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis, and we're awfully glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. I know many of you are cleaning up today, cleaning out. Just stopped at the hardware store on the way into the office this morning, and lots of folks buying supplies to get the debris cleared out. We know that several of you, many of you, have trees down, trees uprooted. We talked about that mid last week, that possibility. And so we wish you well this afternoon. We know that some of you, many of you, are still without power at this point. And in the course of our program today, we're going to be talking with Benita Billingsley-Harris from Dominion Power and North Carolina Power to find out what the latest is in terms of what's happening with the restoration of power. And I know lots of folks have been without power all weekend, and this is, well, I would say actually it's sooner than this that the charm wears off. It's generally about a 24-hour thing you can handle, and you realize how much you appreciate electricity. And then after that, it's pretty ugly. By the way, if you're out and about today, it is Columbus Day, so a lot of folks are not on the job. A lot of schools are closed either for the storm or for teacher work days. Do want to let you know just to be careful while you're out, because there are still quite a number of abandoned cars all over the area. So you will come up on them suddenly. And so I do want you to be aware of that. As well, some of the underpasses are still filled with water and will be for some time. So do be aware of that. The Brambleton Avenue underpass in Norfolk is expected to be closed for several days. The Virginia Beach Boulevard overpass would be a different thing, also is expected to be closed for several days. And if you've seen those pictures, it's pretty incredible to see the water right there at the top. Lots of folks saying this storm was unlike any they've seen in recent years. In Virginia Beach, there are lots of difficulties. Baker Road, Centerville Turnpike, Dam Neck, Princess Anne, Independence Boulevard, London Bridge, Lynn Haven, all around the Oceana area and Pleasant Valley. So those of you who live in Virginia Beach will know those areas well. They are well-traveled roadways, but many bits of those roadways have been closed or should be used with caution. Same scenario in Chesapeake and as well. So again, some stranded vehicles still on the road. Roads that you might think would be open may very well not be. So just use caution as you're rolling around today. We are awfully glad to have with us Benita Billingsley-Harris, who is the Media and Communications Relation Manager for Dominion, Virginia, and North Carolina Power. Benita, nice to have you back with us today.
Thank you, Kathy. Nice. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I know it's been a long weekend for you all, and I see your crews out all over the place. Can you update us on the number of folks who are still awaiting the best site in the world, which is a Dominion, Virginia truck rolling up if you have a power outage?
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, our crews have made a lot of progress. We've got 75% of customers restored statewide that did have power outages. But here in Hampton Roads in northern North Carolina, we still have 100,000 customers that remain without power at just under 3,000 work locations.
Wow.
Virginia Beach is having the most problems. We've had a lot of flooding and damage there, trees down. Followed by the Outer Banks, where, to give you an example, Kathy, that causeway from Nags Head to Manteo has 27 poles along it. 26 of them were broken.
Wow.
So our crews have their work cut out for them.
Boy, no kidding. And certainly the storm was, I think, much more damaging than a lot of people had thought it would be here in Hampton Roads. And this is why I would say, When you hear these weather forecasts, just because they say, oh, yay us, the storm is passing, off the shore or whatever, they're not discrete. They have a lot of rain associated with them, and this one certainly did.
That's exactly right. Plus, we already had the ground very saturated from previous rains that was going on, and I don't think Matthew turned quite as much as expected. So that's why we held back our crews here at home before sending them south, just to make sure that we didn't need them here. And it's a good thing because we certainly needed everybody here. And we now even have some mutual aid crews coming in from out of state to help us get the lights back on here.
Yeah, I continue to bless the crew from Texas that came after 10 days of being out without power after Hurricane Isabel. Isn't that funny? To this day, I still remember the look of that truck. I felt like I was getting rescued by the, by the Texas frontier folks. Yeah.
Now, we take it for granted until we don't have it.
Isn't that the truth? So you say we have about 100,000 left in Hampton Roads without power. Any word, and I know that's a tough thing to estimate, but do you have any thoughts in terms of when most of those folks will be restored?
Well, we're hoping to have a clear idea this afternoon, but right now we expect to have the vast majority of customers restored by Wednesday, with a small percentage in North Carolina going into Thursday and possibly Friday. Mm. But with those mutual aid crews coming from Pennsylvania and New York today, and we've got more coming tomorrow, we do expect to have almost everyone back on by Wednesday.
That's good news indeed. And then again, for those of you who are going to have to wait till Thursday or Friday, know that help is on the way. Well, Benita, I know it's a lot of sleepless nights for you folks, so I'll let you get back to it. But I very much appreciate your being with us today. Never pleasant to be without power, but knowing that the relief is on its way is certainly helpful.
Hopefully that helps. And people can kind of track it themselves, too, on dom.com/outages. And to make sure, Kathy, please remind all of your listeners to report their outages on that map, and then they can also keep track of restoration themselves.
Yeah, it's such a good point because, you know, they can't divine these things. They really need to know that you're out of power, and don't assume that your neighbor's called in. That's a really important thing. Benita Billingsley-Harris, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Kathy.
You're welcome. Take care. Benita's the Media and Community Relations Manager for Dominion, Virginia, and North Carolina Power. So to recap, most of the folks, about 100,000 folks, still without power in Hampton Roads. Another bunch of folks down in the Outer Banks still without power. They expect most to be back by Wednesday. The folks in the Outer Banks who aren't back Wednesday should be by Thursday or Friday. So if you are listening to us on a battery-powered radio, I hope that is welcome news for you. I feel confident that it is. It's a very, very tough storm, and you heard Benita talk about the situation with power poles down in the Outer Banks. So they're working hard to get everybody back up to speed and bringing in those crews from other states to help make that happen. So there you have it. We're at 13 minutes past the hour. We're going to be back in just a moment talking about last night's second presidential debate. We want to know what you thought about what you heard and saw. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. And we're back in a moment. And we're at 14 minutes past the hour, and astonishingly, the phone calls are already coming in after last night's second presidential debate. We're at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. We're wondering whether you saw anything last night that changed your mind or solidified your position. We've been doing these sort of temperature-taking exercises every week or so as we count the days down to Election Day on November 8th. So we're wondering what you're thinking about, what you're seeing, and what you're hearing. My goodness, so much has happened since last we spoke. There was the news of this audio tape that audio and videotape, I guess, that emerged featuring Donald Trump and Billy Bush. Billy Bush has been temporarily suspended from the Today Show as a result of that episode. And Donald Trump had to speak to it last night in the debate. issued an apology online around midnight Saturday night. And so we're talking about that today at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Those are the numbers where you can join us today. So much to talk about. Glad to have Vivian Page in the studio with us today. She is a political blogger, an opinion columnist, a community activist, and an accounting instructor. That's a good combo. I don't know anybody who has that combo, by the way.
Yeah, it means I can talk about taxes.
There you go. Now, by the way, there's a new movie coming out called The Accountant, which I think if you think accountants are meek and mild-mannered, this movie may, you know. But you busted that stereotype for me early on.
Yes.
So you led the way here. Good to have you with us today.
Glad to be here.
Since last we spoke, so much has happened. But let's talk specifically about the revelation of this tape. And we were talking right before we went on the air about the fact that this seems to have resonated with people in a way that seems quite significant. This is the one that has Republicans saying either I'm not supporting anymore or repudiating remarks.
I think the cynical response is that everyone has wives, sisters, daughters, and those kinds of things. And this was the turning point for them, which makes the idea of some of the things that he said before, that obviously they didn't know any disabled people, or they didn't know any Muslims, and they didn't know any Mexicans or Hispanics or anything else. So that's the cynical response to this. But I think it was just the idea that this was just so far over the top. It was just unbelievable to think that you have a candidate who would say these things when knowingly he's being recorded. This is stuff that he's got a mic on his lapel. He knows that. So I think it was just too much.
17 minutes past the hour. We're wondering what you thought about it. We're at 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Mr. Trump last night in the debate again returned to the term locker room talk to describe what happened.
Yeah, that's not. I'm not an athlete, and I'm not male. I can't tell you what men talk about in locker rooms, but I had brothers, I had a father, and so to use their analogy, I've never heard any of them say anything. I have nephews. I've never heard any of them say anything like that. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of other folks with more experience than I, particularly the professional athletes who've been coming out saying this, that they work in locker rooms every day, and they've never heard this kind of talk.
18 minutes past the hour. Tom's on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Tom. You're on the air. Tom, you're on the air. Go ahead. Tom, hang on. We're trying to get you in the conversation here. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, we can. Thank you. Yeah, we're running.
Yeah,
just to be clear, we're running a little short staff today because of the storm. We got some folks who can't get out of their house because of the storm.
Problem.
So thank you for your understanding.
I totally understand. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm thrilled to be able to make a comment. I just wanted to comment on the fact that, you know, I think that Donald Trump is trying to gloss over what he said by saying it's locker room talk. He kind of just keeps saying that. But the fact is that, I'm a guy, I play tennis, I have tennis night, we drink beer, and we, you know, there's talk like that. But there's a difference between saying those words and the context with which we say them. I've never heard anybody say that I would, you know, do that to a woman or a man or anyone for that matter. And, you know, for one thing, it really does a disservice to so many men out there that love sports and spend time in locker rooms and snap towels with the guys. We all do that, and women do it too. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all adults. We use that kind of language, but it's the context with which we use that language that matters so much.
Yeah.
And there's already been a narrative built up about Donald Trump about his narcissism, his what he thinks he can do because of his position of power. And it's very scary to think that if you think you can do that to people because you're, quote, a star, which you really isn't, but if you think you're a star and you can do that, what kinds of things do you think you can do if you become the most powerful man on planet Earth? It's incredibly disconcerting, to say the least. And anybody who heard what he said in the context of where he said it should know better than to vote for this man. That's really my only comment.
Tom, I thank you for the call. Somebody commented offline along this locker room talk thing and said, look, absolutely, in locker rooms where there are heterosexual men, there are conversations about kissing women and the like, but never, never, never assaulting women. And so that was one comment we heard offline. 21 minutes past the hour. Bob Holsworth with us today, the managing principal of Decide Smart, founding director of the Center for Public Policy at Virginia Commonwealth University. Bob, good to talk with you today. Thank you for being here.
Great to be with you, Kat.
And Vivian is right here in the studio with us, so I want to get your take on the debate last night. What did you think?
Well, you know, I thought last night that Trump probably energized or re-energized a lot of the people who were with him from the beginning. Indeed, he might have got some of them more excited than ever before, largely because standing there on the stage, he told Hillary Clinton a lot of what they would like to have heard her listen to for a long time. At the same time, it's hard for me to imagine that he made up much ground last night at all, that he's behind in all of these polls. He was plummeting in some of the battleground states, and he's having a very tough time with women. And I'm not sure that anything that happened last night improve that. Beyond that, even, I think what was probably most troubling for Trump last night and most beneficial to Clinton was simply not what was said, but the body language that was present while Hillary Clinton was speaking. Trump, you know, sort of lurking around in back of her, turning his back on her. My sense is that a lot of people we're going to gain an impression on that debate, not just on what was said or wasn't said, but on how the entire visual came forward.
And Bob,
That's one of the reasons I think that some of these early polls, these snap polls, showed Hillary Clinton with a pretty clear victory last night.
Twitter absolutely exploded last night when Trump stood up behind Clinton, stood right behind her. And I mean, it was just amazing to me to see how many people from all different sides thought that that was a pose that actually belied everything he had said earlier about the locker room talk, because what the response was is that that's the stance, that's the kind of things that abusers do. And it was amazing to see it was just unbelievable to see how many people came up to the same conclusion last night as they were watching that. So he lost a lot of credibility, I think, with folks by saying the words, as Bob said. Bob, as you said, you know, he said these words, but then his body language gave off a totally different aura.
24 minutes past the hour. It's 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. James on the line now from Chesapeake. Hi, James. You're on the air.
How you doing?
All right.
I just want to say it's amazing. It's astonishing how we can take words and change them around. Because first of all, I never heard a locker room talk. You say what you mean, and you mean what you say. I never heard a locker room talk, but it's amazing how we can take words and change them around and make them to fit the way we want it to fit. I look at it like this.
Yeah.
If he was a black man, he'd be put right beside Bill Cosby and say he's one of the worst guys in the world. But as you just said, he proved this point. He said he had the utmost respect for women. But then you just said how he stood behind Hillary Clinton like he was just looking over her, making sure she said the right things. But until we start saying what we mean and mean what we say and be fair about it, being biased is one thing, but when you're fair about what you say and everybody being fair, it's none of that can be said. But when you say you got the utmost respect for women, but then you being a star, that's the scary part. He's being a star, and he can do this to women using his power and his money as being a star, that he can do anything to women. And what really scares me, how the women is standing up. behind and behind political.
James, I really appreciate your call. There was that moment right before the debate, which was a bit of a surprise, where there were four women who had been linked to Bill Clinton earlier on who were positioned with Mr. Trump and saying that they were supporting
three,
Mr. Trump.
Three of them are accused Bill Clinton of various and sundry things. And one of them was the rape victim that Hillary Clinton defended.
That's
her
right.
Rapist.
Thank you for the clarification.
Earlier on, a long time ago. The visuals of that 3.5 minute Facebook Live event that Trump did, and then his intention to seat them in the raised box last night so that they and to have them enter so that they would be able to confront Bill Clinton last night. It just shows us how far we've fallen from the conversation about the visions that people have
sure.
for this country. We actually do have the ability to disagree about where I firmly believe Republicans and Democrats each have a vision for this country. And that's what we should have been talking about. But we're talking about this kind of visual from them, from him doing that. I mean, it was just unbelievable to me.
26 minutes past the hour. Bob Holdsworth, two of our callers have noted this so far. The concern, and they've said it in different ways, about if you keep referring to power and stardom and the like, and what it, in these callers' minds, allows a person to do, then what would happen if you had the power, full power of the United States behind you? And there was a moment in the debate last night where Mr. Trump said essentially that the email scandal would be something that he would be responding to were he elected.
You get a subpoena, and after getting the subpoena, you delete 33,000 emails, and then you acid wash them, or bleach them, as you would say, a very expensive process. So we're going to get a special prosecutor, and we're going to look into it, because you know what? People have been, their lives have been destroyed for doing one-fifth of what you've done, and it's a disgrace. And honestly, you ought to be ashamed of
Secretary
yourself.
Secretary Clinton, I want
Martha,
to follow up on that. I'm going to
let
you talk about
say,
email.
Because everything he just said is absolutely false, but I'm not surprised.
Really?
You know, it is, it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah. Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
Bob Holdsworth, there was a lot of conversation about that particular exchange last night. And I wonder, as a political scientist, what did you think about that exchange?
Well, I had never really seen an exchange like that, particularly with, you know, one presidential candidate suggesting that if he wins, he is going to try to put the opponent in jail. And again, I think that was something that a lot of Trump supporters would like to see. If you go out in a number of communities in Virginia, you'll see signs such as "Lock her up" that will be very prominently displayed on people's homes. But at the same time, that is far outside the normal boundaries and parameters of American political debate. The notion of jailing one's opponent in an election is something that we typically see in authoritarian countries, not democratic countries. And again, you saw Trump's campaign manager this morning, Kellyanne Conway, try to walk that back slightly by saying, you know, that was just a quip. But my guess is that that is going to become more and more prominent in the Trump rallies over the next few weeks, because it's clearly something that really energizes Trump supporters. But I think to Americans who don't support him, not only is it something they react negatively to, I think they're almost horrified at the prospect that democracy has come to this.
Kellyanne actually did say that she said it was just a quip. Within absolute minutes of him having said that on television, there was a sponsored ad on Facebook with that quote in it, with the picture of Trump. So how could it be a quip? This was, Bob is absolutely right. his supporters are going to say it over and over again because, gosh, there's the sponsored ad last night saying exactly that.
Half past the hour, we're at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Vivian Page joining us today along with Bob Holsworth. We're talking about last night's debate. Love to hear from you. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Michael's on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Happy for another great show. I agree with every criticism of Trump, except I do have to say this. I think he stumbled around a good point about taxes last night.
Okay.
His income tax return reveals a huge problem with our tax code, and we don't identify it correctly. The right thinks that taxes are too high, and the left thinks that the rich should pay their share, their fair share, but we have the fourth lowest tax burden in the industrialized world. And the rich, the top 10%, pay 70% of all federal income taxes. It's a progressive system. But the problem is its complexity. And I believe what Fareed Zakaria said on CNN the other day, that it's complex because it's intended to be complex. Because candidates have to raise money from corporations. Because the Supreme Court said that money equals speech. So in order to have something to sell, the only thing they have to sell is lines in the tax code. So that's why we have a tax code with 4 million lines in it. And if we took that away and made a simple tax code, then there wouldn't be any reason for candidates to need to raise so much money. They wouldn't be able to because the corporations wouldn't be able to sell them anything.
Michael,
some points there.
Yeah, I take your point on, and it's actually an issue. So, well done. I take your point on this point, but I wonder if you were advising, or from a voter's perspective, what would you want to see done to the tax code? Is your goal to simplify it or to readjust it in terms of its burden?
I think it should be simplified, and what in the world that process would involve, I'm in no way informed enough to speculate, but apparently Germany and France, their tax code is less than 10% of ours, and they do just fine, and it's easier to do business there. Yes, we simplify the tax code with just a few decent exemptions
for
people who really need it, and then that's it.
Okay.
Close the door.
Michael, thank you for the call. Vivian Page is an accountant in the rest of her life, so I want to get you.
I'm a CPA. I spent 30 years in practice, and so I can say to you, Michael, thank you for appreciating the fact that our code has gotten more complicated. But part of the reason, first of all, I want to separate what's going on the individual side as opposed to the corporate side, which because they're really two totally different things. The money that's being spent, the corporations that are people are raising money from corporations and stuff, that's really kind of a separate issue from the complexity of the tax code as it relates to Donald Trump. One of the reasons why the tax code is so complex is because of Donald Trump and not just Donald Trump, but the real estate lobby in general. I'm going to get in trouble with the real estate people, but in 1986, when we had the last major rewrite of the code, it was intentionally done to try to limit some of these paper loss situations. Intentionally so. So when we have, but the real estate lobby managed to put in some little things that allowed some of these losses to continue. And Donald Trump being involved in real estate means he gets to take advantage of losses that average folks do not get to claim, that we're just not those people. So I agree, the tax code should be simplified, but we got a long way to go to get there.
Thank you for the call, Michael. I appreciate it. 25 minutes before the hour, we're talking about last night's debate. You can join us at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Shirley's on the line now from Norfolk. Hi, Shirley. You're on the air.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
You're most welcome. Thank you for
holding. I have to share my one thought that I've had over and over again throughout this campaign and throughout these debates, and that is that I am terribly embarrassed for the United States of America.
You're not alone.
Why do you say, is there a specific reason for that, or is it just the tone and tenor of the whole thing?
It's the tone and tenor of the whole thing. This is a presidential campaign. We're getting ready to have an election. And the entire debacle, really, has almost been personal attacks on each other.
Shirley, I take your point, and I thank you for the call. Michael got us two issues when we were talking about the tax deal. Dan Rather, a very famous news person, has been really blogging a lot about this election, and he believes that this is one of those moments that is really important in our public life. He thinks this is a real fault line moment. Bob Holsworth, Shirley is embarrassed. Dan Rather sitting here saying this is consequential is not even the word for it in his assessment. Where do you think this election stands in the scheme of things?
Much of the public is, you know, probably even more dissatisfied with this campaign than most others. That's present in the public opinion poll numbers that you see for both candidates in terms of their negatives and positives. And certainly last night didn't, you know, elevate the debate in any significant way at all. So I think you're going to see a lot of people frustrated with that, just as they're frustrated with the general negativity of politics, and this simply reinforces that. At the same time, this is an extraordinarily important election. It's going to say a lot about America's role in the world, and at the end of the day, it's also going to say a lot, in all likelihood, about who sits on the Supreme Court for the next 20 or 30 years. So citizens are placed in a little bit of a bind here that on one hand, they're dissatisfied and in some ways repulsed by some of what has gone on. But on the other hand, I think they have to recognize that the choice is a relatively momentous one. It's an open seat. We're not reelecting an incumbent. And in fact, the decisions that are going to be made about foreign policy, terrorism, the economy, and issues such as, you know, police violence and violence against the police are going to be absolutely momentous. And when you add on the Supreme Court on top of that, you'd have to say this is a very consequential election, despite the fact that a lot of people are very uneasy with the way it's being run.
Go ahead.
Just one quick thing. Bob mentioned it. That debate last night was about 15 miles from Ferguson, and there was no mention of criminal justice reform or anything about the policing. I would have liked to have seen the moderators bring that in.
It's a great point. This is an election viewed so consequentially by The Atlantic that for only the third time in 160 years, they have stepped out and endorsed a candidate. We're glad to have Claire Foran with us today as an associate editor at The Atlantic. Claire Foran, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. How did you watch the debate last night? I mean, did you watch it all live, and were you blogging at the same time, or was it a more sort of reflective experience for you?
Yeah, well, we do a live blog for these events, and we'll also, you know, often have people at the events themselves. But I watched it, you know, on C-SPAN, and I was blogging and giving my reactions in real time, and it certainly was. I mean, I didn't know what to expect other than that I was expecting a very, very ugly debate to unfold, given the, you know, the revelations over the Trump 2005 audio recording and the way he had responded by insinuating that, you know, he'd be bringing up Bill Clinton's alleged sexual misconduct and attempting to tie that to Hillary. So I was really bracing for sort of aggressive, ugly, hostile attacks. Mm. And you know, I mean, we did see that on the stage, and I almost thought the most remarkable moment was just seeing such vicious sort of insults. I mean, you saw Trump threatening that if he were president, he'd put Clinton in jail. You know, she's painting him as this misogynist, sort of racist, kind of vile person. And at the very end, they were both asked to name some quality that they liked about each other. And it was just kind of, I mean, the whole thing was sort of hard to take it all in, but
yeah,
it was certainly an ugly debate.
That was a surreal moment, and here it is.
Well, I certainly will, because I think that's a very fair and important question. Look, I respect his children. His children are incredibly able and devoted, and I think that says a lot about Donald. I don't agree with nearly anything else he says or does, but I do respect that, and I think that is something that as a mother and a grandmother is very important to me. So I believe that this election has become in part so so conflict-oriented, so intense, because there's a lot at stake. This is not an ordinary time, and this is not an ordinary election. We are going to be choosing a president who will set policy for not just 4 or 8 years, but because of some of the important decisions we have to make here at home and around the world, from the Supreme Court to energy and so much else. And so there is a lot at stake. It's one of the most consequential elections that we've had. And that's why I've tried to put forth specific policies and plans, trying to get it off of the personal and put it on to what it is I want to do as president. And that's why I hope people will check on that for themselves so that they can see that, yes, I've spent 30 years, actually maybe a little more, working to help kids and families, and I want to take all that experience to the White House and do that every single day.
Mr. Trump.
Well, I consider her statement about my children to be a very nice compliment. I don't know if it was meant to be a compliment, but it is a great. I'm very proud of my children, and they've done a wonderful job, and they've been wonderful, wonderful kids. So I consider that a compliment. I will say this about Hillary. She doesn't quit. She doesn't give up. I respect that. I tell it like it is. She's a fighter. I disagree with much of what she's fighting for. I do disagree with her judgment in many cases. But she does fight hard, and she doesn't quit, and she doesn't give up. And I consider that to be a very good trait.
Thanks to both of you.
19 minutes before the hour, we're talking with Vivian Page, political blogger, Bob Holsworth, managing principal of Decide Smart, and Claire Foran, associate editor with The Atlantic. And we're at 16 minutes before the hour, 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. You know, we've talked a lot about, gosh, we wish we could get to the issues, and maybe we're spending too much time on the style instead of the substance. But I have to say, you know, just personally, as I was watching that debate, I found my stomach in such a lurch that that moment at the very end, I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe because they had walked out and not shook hands. And I sort of thought, okay, well, at least there's that.
That gets back to what I said initially. What I said earlier was that Republicans and Democrats each have a separate vision for this country. We can disagree about the vision. Parties can disagree about the vision. It's not about personal. It's about what you're running to lead the largest, the most well-respected country in the free world. So what are we trying to do here? And so we can disagree and don't have to agree on point by point. Let's talk about the points. Mm. And so that's the hope that you got from listening to that.
Charles is on the line from Newport News. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Hello, Jeff. Thanks for the opportunity.
You're welcome.
Hello, everybody. I just wanted to briefly disagree with Bob a little bit with regards to only Trump supporters want to see Hillary prosecuted for the emails and et cetera. I have a friend of mine who is supporting Hillary simply because she fears Trump, which is a sad reason to support somebody. But anyhow, I dislike Trump as well, of course. I'm independent. I'm not going to vote for I want to vote for a third party. But I think this friend of mine works with a general service person. She worked for many, many years. And had she done the same thing that Hillary Clinton had done, she knows that she would have suffered some very severe penalties. And Clapper of the FBI said the same exact thing. Comey?
Oh, Comey, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he basically said, don't think anybody else can get away with this. Other people would be prosecuted, but in this case, we're not going to prosecute. So I just wanted to disagree just a little bit with Bob on that fine point. It's not just supporters who will agree on that. It's independent voters and even a Hillary supporter as well, because there's two different levels. Just like Trump gets away with not paying taxes and corporations do as well, there's two different levels. We have a case system in our country, so to speak, and certain politicians are above the law, it seems, and certain business people.
Got it. Charles, I thank you so much for the call. This is a very interesting point because it gets to a sense, and I would say you could interpret this all over the political map, of a certain kind of elitism that allows some people not to be not to face the same consequences that the rest of us do. And I, in a community like this, where you have so many people who are federally connected, you know, I've heard people say this, Charles, about, you know, and of course there have been how many hearings on this? I've forgotten now how many.
Too many
hearings.
To count.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Charles. 15 minutes before the hour, Stephanie's on the line from Suffolk. Hi, Stephanie, you're on the air. Stephanie, you're on the air. Okay, Stephanie, if we dropped you out, I apologize for that. Just give us a call back at 440.
Hello?
Oh, there she is. Hi, Stephanie.
Are you there?
Yes, we are. Go right ahead.
I was going to say, I was trying to call in about the same prosecution issue that, you know,
yes,
with this area, a lot of people could get prosecuted for that. Also, with the tax issue, I don't think it's fair that that panelist said something about real estate being, you know, using losses. I know restaurant owners who have had to use losses.
Uh-huh.
Lots of small businesses that went under.
Okay.
People trying to make this country great have had to use losses like that. So it's just, it's not fair to kind of single out real estate.
I've singled out real estate, Stephanie, for a specific reason. There's a special loss that is available to real estate, what's known as real estate professionals, that doesn't limit their losses the same as it limits in other circumstances. And that was a part of the revision of the 1986 code that the real estate lobby went very strongly afterwards. In the early 80s, we had lots of people claiming paper losses. And basically what happened when they went to the, when they did that major revision of the code in 86, they were trying to keep that from being the case. So they extended the they extended the times for depreciation and stuff like that. But they also, and this gets really wonky, but they also primarily just limited for some certain people and didn't do it for real estate professionals.
Sure,
and that's the reason why I brought that up.
Got it. And Stephanie, we, you know, you're precisely correct. There are lots of reasons to declare a loss. Beyond that, is there something else that you wanted to get in there, Stephanie?
No, I don't like either one. I'm not trying to stand up for either one, but you know.
Well, I'm sorry about that, Stephanie, because I always think that the election process should be something we enter into joyfully, and that just does not seem to be the case for so many this cycle. So thank you for the call from Suffolk, and thank you for waiting so long to make your comment. We're at 13 minutes before the hour. It's 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Claire Foran, there has been conversation all over the weekend about the Republican Party having been described as in crisis. There are conversations about the prospect of pressuring Mr. Trump off the ticket and whether donors were looking at this and saying if the debate performance wasn't strong, they were going to pull support. You heard some more political leaders distancing themselves this weekend. What are your reporters learning about that? And is that is the Republican Party, would you describe the Republican Party as in crisis?
Well, I think that it's sort of true and not true at the same time. I mean, I definitely think that the Republican Party is in crisis in a sense, but it's really, I mean, it's remarkable to see the high-profile defections of Republican elected officials away from Trump. I mean, you have people like as high-profile as John McCain saying, you know, I'm withdrawing my support. And that's a big deal. And the way that Republican leaders have condemned his comments and even some have called for him to step aside. But all that being said, it's still important to remember that many of the top Republican leaders in the party, even people like Paul Ryan or Mitch McConnell, who have condemned his remarks in this 2005 audio recording. So Paul Ryan has said that that was a sickening comment. And even just today, he said, you know, he can no longer defend Donald Trump. That's a big deal. But at the same time, he's still endorsing Donald Trump. So until we actually get to a point where, you know, he is repudiated by these top party leaders, or we find out that they are taking some kind of action, you know, the party is still largely behind him, even if there are these striking defections. But I think there's still time for things to go continually south for Trump and for Mike Pence. There's been rumors that Mike Pence might be thinking of dropping out. He's tried to put those to rest today, saying that Trump did a good job in the debate and he's standing by him. But they certainly are in shaky territory, and there's been signs of strain even between the vice president and the presidential relationship. Trump last night openly broke with Pence over Syrian policy. That was a remarkable moment. He said he disagreed with Mike Pence, So yes, I think that there's certainly a certain level of crisis in the party. But for now, these sort of upper echelons are still behind Trump.
Claire Foran, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And Claire Foran, in fact, has written a piece about Mike Pence looking on to 2020. And it just pains me to have the words 2020 come out of my mouth, honestly, because I just think we need to get through 16. But Claire Foran, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Associate Editor of The Atlantic, will continue to follow your coverage.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Claire, take care. We're at 10 minutes before the hour. It's 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Lots of folks still want to get in on the conversation. Ryan's on the line from Portsmouth. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
What I took from the debate is the same thing I took months ago.
Okay.
It's way past time to take these two children, separate them, send them home to their parents with notes stapled to their shirt. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a debacle. And I want to, you know, reference a comment one of your guests made about how this is the most respected nation on earth. No, maybe at one time, but we're a laughing stock across the world. At least to those people that I know in different countries, the people that they know, we're a laughing stock. And it's only making it worse, especially at a time when Russia is trying to assert themselves, that we can't even get our election together and have professional candidates. And you know what? I blame the media partly because we do have a viable third-party candidate in Gary Johnson. He's professional, and at the very least, he's not a criminal, and he's not a philanderer or a misogynist or racist. You know, I mean, let's get it together. I'm very disappointed in the media. I think that's the biggest problem.
Ryan, I thank you for the call. I think there will be a lot of critique on the other side of this about the media's role in it. And certainly there have been a lot of conversations on this broadcast about people who really want to make sure that we see those third party candidates and that they are given an equal shot at the media landscape. 9 minutes before the hour. Steve's on the line from Portsmouth. Hi, Steve. You're on the air. Steve, go ahead. You're on the air. Sorry. Okay. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
You can hear me. Okay.
Yes.
So I want to first say I'm not a Trump supporter. I spent 24 years in the Navy, but I find this locker room thing where the professional athletes are trying to back away from the concept of locker room talk to be very disingenuous. I mean, you look at guys like Wilt Chamberlain, Magic Johnson, and NFL football players too numerous to mention who have conducted sexual abuse, and they want to say, oh, yeah, that's not locker room talk. So that may be a topic for a whole other show because I think we have a culture of misogyny in the United States. And so to say that, you know, it's just Trump, I think it's a bigger problem.
Deeper issue. Yes, Steve, that's a really interesting point. And so many so many folks who are political observers have said exactly what you're saying in the respect that this particular moment really may be a moment where we want to stop and take stock of where we are and how times have changed. I thank you for the call. Diane is on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Diane. You're on the air.
Taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had two things to say. One, I think it's shameful that Donald Trump keeps bringing up things that Bill Clinton did that Hillary had to live through that she had no part in. And secondly, he needs to learn something about the Constitution if he's going to be the president to think that he can throw Hillary Clinton in jail when she hasn't even been charged with anything or had a trial to say that she's guilty of anything. And it just scares me that that man might be president, and I'm ashamed that people would vote for him and say the things that they do and repeat the things that he said.
Diana, thank you for the call. Bob Holdsworth, this we come back to this issue of of that moment where there was the conversation about prosecution, and people seem to really have taken hold of that moment and been concerned about it. And yet, having said that, we just played the clip a couple of moments ago. You heard that in the theater, there was quite a lot of applause.
Well, Kathy, that's been part of the line that has actually been used over and over in the campaign. In these rallies, they have cheers about lock her up. So the difference here is that he said it to her face. And that's exactly, I think, what many of his supporters wanted. And I think what he was trying to do last night was to solidify that base against the erosion that was occurring among the establishment, you might say, in his own party on this sense. And so what Trump did, and fairly successfully last night, is that there's a little more pressure on the people who are breaking from him from sort of the grassroots of the Republican Party. At the same time, he was behind in the polls. There are a number of people who already said that they didn't believe that he treated women fairly. And I can't believe that standing up there and saying that another presidential candidate should be in jail and that he would see to it that that would happen if he got elected is going to win him any votes among the people who already weren't there. I think what was happening last night is that the campaign was in such a sense of such desperate straits because of the erosion of support that was occurring over the weekend, is that what the Trump people decided they would do is to mobilize their base. Now, secondly, there's an argument put forward by some of the people associated with Trump, with some of the people on talk radio, you clearly being an exception, that also suggests that this base is actually large enough to win because it's consistently underpolled. And what they see is a global movement with Trump here in the United States, Brexit in England, some of the local elections that occurred in Germany, and they're expecting a big surprise on Election Day. I'm not sure that too many people agree completely with that analysis, but that seems to me to be where they are. But at the same time, I'm just not sure.
Yeah.
If you're behind in the polls, calling for the candidate who's ahead in the polls to go to jail is going to get you any new voters.
We will see. Bob Holsworth, thank you so much for joining us, and I hope we get to check in with you again before Election Day. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Kathy. You take care. And take
welcome.
Care, Vivian.
Take
okay.
care.
Vivian, we've got about a minute left. You have said previously, to Bob's last point, that you think that as you look at the polls, which today are pretty good for Secretary Clinton. You've said yourself, don't believe it till
no,
you
no,
see
no,
it.
No, 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 absolutely not. I mean, when Bob was talking about people who are being undercounted, I mean, the pollsters have had a hard time trying to figure out what the likely voter screen is going to look like. That's one of the reasons why we have difficulty. But I've got a good friend right here in Norfolk who tells me, she's a Trump supporter, and we talk fairly regularly, and she says, they are absolutely undercounting us. They are undercounting us. And I have to say, you know, I just get that sense that that's what's happening. So the polls are, I think, closer than what we would like them to be. And the only poll that matters is on Election Day. So that's the one we should all, you know, go out there and vote on in 29 more days.
29 days. Vivian Page, thank you for being with us
today.
And we're
going
to have to get you back to talk about these constitutional amendment questions because who knew all this was going to happen
exactly.
over the weekend? So we got to come back and talk about that.
Be glad to.
Those are on the ballot as well. Thanks so much for listening today. By the way, we talked earlier in the program about the storm. We really want to hear from you today on the coastline. This is our line that we've set up for people to tell the stories of sea level rise, of recurrent flooding, of your impacts from the way that things are changing in Hampton Roads. So that coastline number is 757-689-7987, or better yet, coast-line@whro.org. Coast-line@whro.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you right back here tomorrow.